The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And if
there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven yep. science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming to you live from our houses in Los Angeles, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. Tonight, we all know what a baseball manager does, but what does a baseball general manager do? Manage generally? We'll find out from Peter Bevassi, who was GM of the San Diego Padres before he went on to be the first president of the Toronto Blue Jays. He's also the son of legendary Dodger general manager Buzzy Bevassi, the subject of Buzzy and the Bull, a new book by our own Ken Lezebnik, who has just taken advantage of the fact that he writes this billboard to plug his own book. Really, Ken, do you hear me plugging my novel Schrodinger's Ball, a tender and hilarious story available on Amazon? I don't think so. Plus, Duckgate. Remember the episode that was littered with ducks quacking all over the place? It proved very divisive. We'll hear from nobodies who love duck soup and nobodies who told us to duck off. I'm Adam Felber, the man who tries to keep this show's conversational roster stocked with topical bench players who can close out a discussion. And now, please welcome the woman who loads her mental roster with free swingers who have no conversational plate discipline at all. That's a baseball reference or two. Paula Poundstone!
Yay!
Welcome, Paula.
You know, Ken nailed it. That's what I don't have. I don't have conversational discipline. But, you know...
No!
No, really, Adam. Really. But in my defense, I have to say, I guess I don't know if it's an age thing, a COVID thing, because I have the pod puppy and nine cats. I don't know, but lately now I cannot keep a thought in my head. I put stuff okay. in the refrigerator that doesn't belong there, like my neighbor's corpse.
Your neighbor's corpse? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, can I cut in here for a moment, Paula? Because I have some great evidence of your lack of conversational discipline in that you didn't introduce tonight's house band, master of old-time American fiddle and banjo, who is the founder of Tiki Parlor Recordings. David Bragger is our house band tonight. Let's welcome him.
Thank you, David.
No.
All right, now back to your lack of conversational discipline.
Hi, Adam, and thanks to tonight's house band, a master of old-time American fiddle and banjo, who is also the founder of Tiki Parlor Recordings, David Bragger. Thank you so much, David.
Sounds, David.
Yeah,
sounds
couldn't
fantastic.
Have put it better myself.
Yeah. What kind of asshole would blow right by and not even thank you, David? I can't imagine. Yeah, you know, I wasn't socially adept before, But with the pandemic, it's only gotten worse. I'm around dogs and cats all day.
Yeah.
I went to a friend's backyard the other day, and I started to talk. I don't think I shut up for an hour. I only knew it was time
to go.
Because the only reason I knew it was time to go is they were scratching at the door.
Your neighbors?
Yeah, to get in to their own house. I can't afford therapy. So what I've been doing is talking to the parking lot ticket taker near my eye doctor's office, and she says it's stress and that I owe $3 more. Okay, you know what? Now I have broken every social convention since I've been on today. You know, I forgot to thank our house band, David Bragger, originally. And we've heard both Tony and Bonnie's voices, but we didn't even say hello to them.
So let's fix that problem. Go around the horn and say hello to our two participants. First, over somewhere in the Simi Valley, probably in bed, it's Bonnie Burns, Captain Crinkle, our producer, your manager. Bonnie, how are you?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Just
good.
I'm a four. Does that mean anything to anybody? I'm a four.
I'm a nine. I'm great. And, you know, I'm no longer prone. I'm doing my things. But I have a tip I want to give to the nobodies that I've been meaning to mention for a lot of weeks now.
Okay.
I wanted to pass this along. Okay, so there's this thing that's called non-fat powdered dry milk. I don't know if you know about it. But it's milk with no preservatives at all. It's just non-fat milk, vitamin D, and fortified with vitamin D and vitamin A, I think. So this is what I do. I put it in my coffee. We have it at home. When you put it in your coffee, because it's not liquid, it doesn't get your coffee colder. Right? Isn't that great?
Right.
And then you don't have to worry about buying milk and having it spoil in the refrigerator, especially now, COVID times, you don't have to go grocery shopping because it never spoils.
So you're saying if you drink coffee and you don't drink milk, non-fat dry milk is the way to go.
No, it's also perfect. Like if you're single, you don't have to worry about like buying milk and the carton of milk spoils. So you have to go buy a new one because you've got the non-fat powdered milk.
What does that have to do with being single?
Well, whatever. You're at home and you don't have a lot of people drinking milk.
I think that dating sites need to really hit this milk thing hard.
I'm trying to parse out why you would, I mean, I guess it's easier to just pour some powder into your coffee than it is to let milk reach room temperature before you add it to your coffee.
No, but, okay, the thing about those creamers and everything, they have a lot of additives and a lot of, like, you know, those soy bean kind of fats that are really bad for your heart. This is just pure milk.
You know, Adam, what you're not taking into consideration is that she's single. That's such an important part of this story. She's single. You know, another thing you could do if you're single and you didn't want to be is go out with somebody. Or you can get a powdered date. Have you ever tried a powdered date?
Those can be terrific for the single people.
Oh my gosh, it's so great because you can keep it like in a closet, and then
your date will last forever.
And then when you're ready, you pour water into him, and then keep him in the refrigerator, you know, for months.
Bonnie, I think it's a good tip. I am skeptical that that powdered milk is really as tasty as real milk, but I think for a cup of coffee, it sounds like a good idea. Yeah.
Okay.
Am I the only one for whom it felt a little left fieldy?
Not at all.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to say.
Just out of the blue, you bring up a powdered milk.
No, well, I'm out of things to say. I've had a perfectly good week, but it's like, you know.
Could that be part of the reason you're single? Like that you've gone out on a date?
Yeah.
And
yeah, if this is your conversation, Bonnie.
I can't think of anything sexier.
Yeah, the guy says, man, you look unbelievable. And you say, thank you. You know, I've been putting a powdered milk into my coffee. That could be, I'm starting to see a problem. Yeah.
Not only is powdered milk not sexy, as Tony points out, but it doesn't even work as a metaphor for anything sexy. You know, nobody will ever be able to say, like, I'm going to go pick up some powdered milk, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you're on a date and you're across the candlelit table and you say, you know, have you tried powdered milk in your coffee? It doesn't make it get colder.
God, shoot me.
You know, the thing is, or you order coffee at the an intimate little coffee shop and then you pull your Ziploc plastic bag out of your pocket and start dumping in some sort of powdered crap. That just, you know, and then, you know, it's kind of crinkly and a little bit dirty, and you hand it over and say, would you like some? Yeah, so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the sad part is, that's true. She's probably been with me when I've done something like that.
Now, moving on to the person that I...
I don't want to move on. I want to just keep talking about the powdered milk.
I just think there's so much badly.
There. I want my whole life to be powdered. I just want a powdered life. I want to have powdered activities. Just, I want to have powdered emotions. You add water and you just feel so happy.
Oh, this is so wrong. I do want to move on to the person who I've come to think
of. No, Adam, I have to tell you something. You know, yes. I heard Trump say the other night that powdered ballots are going to cause a lot of fraud.
It's going to make the election a sham.
Yeah, the powdered ballots are a nightmare, and they're sending them out. You don't even ask for them. They send them out, and you get the powdered ballots. It's something we've got to keep our eyes on it. Republicans, got to keep your eyes on that.
Let's move on to the person that I have come to think of as the antidote to segments like this. Tony Anita Hall.
How can I top powdered milk? Woo! It's a tough one.
Tony, what's new?
So I just opened up my Robinhood app to see how much money I made in the stock market today.
Oh, and how'd you do?
I made $2.85.
Whoa.
How much had you invested?
So overall, I've made about $40. I invested $140,
wow.
And I've made $41.
You invested $140? Wow.
I invested $140.
That is impressive.
About 2 months ago.
You are good at this stuff.
So in 2 months, you've grown $140 into $180.
Yes, I have.
Wow.
So if you made $2 today alone... About how much powdered stuff can you get with that? How much powdered milk, Bonnie, do you think she can get with that? Powdered milk king, Bonnie Burns. You know...
Bonnie, have you invested in big powder yet?
No. Powdered milk's not that cheap, to tell you the truth.
And of course it's not. So you can get... It's $3.19 at Target. Powdered non-fat milk. Comes in a box.
Did you just look that up?
I did. I'm sorry.
No, the box isn't that good. What brand was the box?
Tony, did you just look that up?
There's certain brands that taste better.
I did. I'm sorry. It's the Target brand.
If we could just stay focused on the show instead of Googling powdered milk.
I was curious. Okay, Carnation is $4.49 for... 9.5 ounces.
That brand is good.
Wait, would you turn that fucking thing off? You're still Googling. Stop it. You know what? Let me just flip on my vacuum here and do a little vacuuming for a few minutes. This is not the time to invest or do chores. We're doing, you know, podcasting is kind of relaxed, but that's a bit much, I think. Can you hear me? Can you hear me from the shower? I'm wondering if I could just get a quick shower.
Sorry.
Jesus.
Well, I don't want to brag, but while you guys were talking just now, I invested in Carnation at $6.35 per share. So, ate my dust.
Yeah. You know, any podcast, the way you make money is through the advertising, obviously. And we really want to advertise, and we do this, we want to advertise for companies that we do feel very passionate about. So if anybody out there has any kind of a powdered business, please get in touch with us.
Yeah, please. Because, oh, you know what? We do have a sponsor that's powdered. We have that,
We do Hydrate.
That sports drink that's so good. Hydrant is fantastic.
Yeah, it is good. I tried it. I enjoyed it. And Google, you might want to go with us, Google, for your advertising, because even during our show, we're still Googling. Not me, but the others. So that's good. Oh, my gosh. You know what, Adam? I have a word this week.
I'm not surprised.
In these uncertain times, isn't it good to know that I have a word? The word is pernicious. It's an adjective that means having a harmful effect, especially in a gradual or subtle way. Here, I'll use it in a sentence. Putin's skilled information campaign has had a pernicious effect on our democracy. Now, I have a feeling we're going to be hearing a lot of that word, so let's add it to my vocabulary song.
Okay.
This week's word is pernicious. It's an adjective that means having a harmful effect, especially in a gradual or subtle way. I'm spending more time on the computer every day. Last week's word was impunity. It's a word that means freedom from punishment or from the harmful results of an action. He fell off the roof and didn't end up in traction. The week before that, we had phlegmatic. It's an adjective that means unemotional and calm. Oh, look, I just drove a nail through my palm. Going back before that, we had quotidian. Get it? Get it? Quotidian? It's an adjective that means happening every day, daily or ordinary, like a Mainer eating a blueberry. And not long ago, we had gaucherie. It's a noun that means awkward or unsophisticated ways. I haven't used a napkin in days. Let's never forget gallimaufry, which I pronounced wrong until James Hyder corrected me. It's a noun that means confused, jumbler, medley of things. Hodgepodge, who's podge, hodgepodge. Adam doesn't think my song is replicable, replicable, replicable. But I do, I do, I do.
Woo! Yeah, Paula.
Wow.
Encore,
oh, no, I think
encore.
I did her. Oh, I think I did it wrong again.
I think you did it great, Paula. No, that's wrong. No, that's wrong.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? Sometimes it's just been such an uncertain and stressful time. It just feels good to rock out on the Glock.
Yeah, you are definitely rocking out with your Glocking out. No doubt about it.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah, and I'm available. I'm available for socially distanced birthday parties. I can just drive my car up to your house, stay in the car, and rock out on the Glockenspiel. Just reach us through paulapoundstone.com.
And she's not using Glockenspiel as a euphemism for anything.
No.
She would drive up to your house and rock out on her Glockenspiel.
Rocking on the Glock. Rocking on the Glockenspiel.
Right. That's absolutely right. coming up, Buzzy Bavassi said, I get tired of hearing my ball players bellyache all the time. They should sit in the press box sometime and watch themselves play. We'll hear from Buzzy's son, Peter Bavassi, who watched thousands of baseball players play, both with and without the bellyache. And that's coming up when we return on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Hey guys, it's Adam, and tonight is January 3rd, and I am picking Giannis Antetokounmpo to score less than 36 points and James Harden to score more than 16. Why? Because I like beards. Am I putting a lot of money on this? I am not, because I'm not really a gambler, but I am having a lot of fun with Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They're the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, who I would lose to, you pick more or less than 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in, or in my case, not. So I don't bet a lot.
With the basketball season here, you can now pick combo projections across football and basketball from the Specials League, a league created specifically for combo projections that include two or more players from different sports or leagues. For example, LeBron James and Travis Kelce had a 10.5 combo of 3 points made plus receptions. Do I get that? Kind of a little bit. Prize Picks even offers a reboot policy so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and doesn't return in the second, that player is rebooted. So, it's like an insurance policy. Go to prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/nobody and use code NOBODY for a first deposit match of up to $100. And then drop by and see how I did with the Greek Freak and Harden again on January 3rd. My hopes are not that high. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
On this day in unremarkable history, Rosemary Wood said, "Move the chair closer."
Thank you, house band David Bragger. We are back. Paula, big news. One of us, and I'm not saying who, has a book out. One of our own.
Ken Lezebnik wrote a book.
Yay,
Ken.
It's about baseball. It's called Buzzy and the Bull. Ken, who was Buzzy and who was the Bull?
Well, Buzzy Bevesi was the legendary general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers in the 1950s and the LA Dodgers in the 60s. And he led the Dodgers, he led that team to 4 world championships. And the Bull is Al the Bull Ferrara, an outfielder for the Dodgers in the 60s who said, "If there was an off-the-field Hall of Fame, I'd be voted in on the first ballot." And my book, Buzzy and the Bull, chronicles their unlikely friendship and revolves around the Dodger championship year of 1965, which was, 55 years ago.
Wow. Ken, that must have been a trip writing that book.
It was actually a wonderful experience because I got to sit down with the Bull once a week and talk to him for about a year and hear about his wild and crazy life. Which led him from the streets of Brooklyn, where he grew up in Brooklyn as a kid, to playing for the team of his dreams, the Dodgers. And he was a bon vivant. He had a sort of wonderfully crazy life that involved a lot of romances. And because he was in L.A., it included such sort of sidebar little side gigs as appearing on the TV show Batman in the 60s. It's one of Catwoman's henchmen. And later in his life, he became a maitre d' at a Sunset Strip restaurant, even though he knew nothing about how to open a bottle of wine or how to toss a salad. He was just a great larger-than-life character. And Buzzy Bevesi was a fantastic general manager.
Well, we have Buzzy Bevesi's son with us on the phone, and he's a baseball giant in his own right. He was general manager of the San Diego Padres and the first president and general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. He's here to explain what a general manager does and how his father did it so well. Please welcome Peter Bevesi.
Thank you. Now you know that Buzzy and the Bull, the book that you're discussing tonight, Buzzy, yes, was my father and longtime general manager of the Brooklyn and Los Angeles Dodgers. General managed the club to 8 pennants and 4 world champions. And the Bull is Al the Bull Ferrara, one of the most mischievous major league players ever to put on a uniform. And he was a great favorite of Buzzy's and all of us at the Dodgers. So it's Buzzy and the Bull.
Buzzy and the Bull. Now, let me ask you, so you made, did you make that pilgrimage with your dad? Did you guys move from Brooklyn and Ebbets Field out to Los Angeles and into the ravine there?
Yes. I was just a kid at the time. And Buzzy really was either New York or born and bred and did not really want to go out to the West Coast. But Walter O'Malley saw a pot of gold out there and decided to abandon Brooklyn for the West Coast. And as the story goes, you have Mussolini and Hitler. We have O'Malley, Mussolini, and Hitler trapped in a room with an aggrieved Brooklyn Dodger fan holding a pistol with 2 bullets in it. And who does the aggrieved fan shoot? O'Malley twice.
Okay, there you go. Because he moved the team? Is that why?
That's it. I'm going to open for you next time you go out on the road.
So, Peter, I think I get what the players on the field are doing for the most part, but what does a general manager do?
Now, you see, you would put me on that spot. Well, you have two eras of general managing. One was about 15 years ago, and then before that, the general manager ran both sides of the business, the revenue-generating side of the baseball business and then the baseball side, the player side of the business. And today, it's split. You have somebody running the business side, and then you have a special guy who does only player personnel work. And that a man is typically called the general manager. And he arranges for the scouts to go out and look at the players, to sign them, to put them in a farm system, to develop them, and then to bring them up to the major league club. The objective being that you win as many games as you can and
right.
perhaps win the pennant.
So this general manager term made more sense, really, when they did both sides, when they did the baseball side and they yes. did the commerce side as well. That makes yes. sense to be called a general manager. Now it's sort of specific manager, wouldn't you say?
It's split. Right. My last job in baseball was president of the Cleveland Indians, and I ran both sides of the operation. And then a few years after that, the owners began splitting it. Frankly, I mean, I used to sleep at the ballpark many nights, but there's just not enough time, energy make both sides of the equation work properly if you're one guy.
You slept at the ballpark because you were so busy that there was no point going home. You'd just have to get up and come back to work. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. Yes.
And did you sleep on the outfield?
No, in the office.
Oh, man. If nobody was there, I would sleep in the outfield. I love it that you'd look at that perfectly manicured field the next day and there'd be sort of a sleeping bag mold on it, like grass sort of pressed down. You go, wait a minute, I think our GM slept here last night. All right, so if you're doing the player's side of the mathematical equation, right. how does the general manager... How do they choose the players?
Well, the scouting analysis of players back before the split in the organization was done by eyeballing the players and saying, well, this guy, he can play in the big leagues, he runs fast, he hits and so forth. But now, more recently, it's all statistics and metrics driven. The young general managers today are schooled. They come out of the very finest of universities, advanced degrees, and they're all trained in what they call sabermetrics, which is a baseball statistics to the 10th power. When we were coming into the game, statistics were important, but they were less important than the veteran scout eyeballing the player and determining whether that player had the fortitude to be a good player, whether he had the guts and the instincts to be a good player, which statistics can't tell you. So it's a different game today. It's a wonderful game, but it's different. And the neat thing is that the kids today who are playing, the professional players, they love the statistics. They were all raised with computers. They love the idea of being able to watch themselves in action with several different camera angles so that they can critique their own pitching style or their hitting mechanics.
But wait a minute. So who then brings to it that more sort of intuitive, I mean, if you have all these statistics and everything, who brings to it that intuitive, like Tom Smith finding Seabiscuit or like Red Auerbach finding Havlicek? Who brings that where the stats aren't necessarily there? You just sort of look with your eyes and you go, wait a minute, there's something here that someone is missing. Is that still a part of it?
Yes, the best baseball organizations, Paul, are those that employ the strategy which you just described. And that is, on the one hand, they have all the statistical analysis, but on the other hand, you have veteran scouts who are giving the general manager input on the psychology of the players. And it's up to that general manager to meld the objective and subjective parts of the equation.
So is a scout different from a general manager?
Well, here's how it begins. The scouts are probably the most important employees in the baseball organization. They begin looking at players when they're very young. Some are just freshman high school, even Pony League. And then they follow these kids all the way through high school and college, and then they draft them, and then they go out into your farm system, and eventually they come to your big league club if they have that sort of talent. So the scout begins the process, and you have various types of scouts. You have the free agent scout who goes out and looks at the young players. You have scouts in the Caribbean and in Asia, because we're getting a lot of players from the Caribbean. A ton of players from the Caribbean. And
there's also pirates there. There's pirates. Pirates of the Caribbean. Have they taken a look at them?
No, they're in Pittsburgh now, Paula.
Oh, my mistake. All right, wait. Here's what I'm not clear about again. The scouts are not the same as the general manager. Am I right about that?
No. Many general managers were scouts, and then they graduate to being general managers. And you have various types of scouts, the amateur scouts and the scouts who are just strictly professional scouts. They travel around looking at the competition, seeing who you should strategize about and against when you play them. And then you have cross-checkers who they're asked to go out and compare younger players. Scout in the East is saying that he loves this particular player. Somebody in the Midwest likes somebody else. And so the cross-checker goes and looks at each of the key players and then makes the determination who's the best of the three or four.
That's so funny, because on an airplane they do cross-check, and I've always wondered what it was. And apparently that's it. all right, I realize we're talking about scout now and not general managing, but just I am curious, when you were talking about the sort of psychological elements of the player that someone takes a look at, how do they do that? They don't like have them do Rorschach tests or something.
Well, what they do, Paula, is both at the amateur level, the high school and college level, and even at the professional level, before you trade for a guy, at the kid level, high school, you are checking with his coach, his teachers, the principal, family members, extended family members. If he's a churchgoer, you're asking questions for the parish priest. Trying to find out everything you can about the players, what we call makeup, the player's makeup, which is a very big ingredient. And a number of players that I know of have been turned down. And we didn't sign them because even though they were terrific, had terrific talent, there was something in their background or makeup that we thought, well, we're going in another direction.
Wow. So the parish priest might have said, like, you know, he was in the choir, but he didn't always sing. Sometimes he mouthed the words, and then that kid's out. That's it.
Yeah.
Wow. That just seems like... Such a
and the players are aware of this. This is not new. I mean, they're aware that, and you tell them, listen, you know, we'd love to sign you, but we want to check a few things here.
All right. So the general manager does the salary negotiations. Is that correct?
That is correct. Usually, you're dealing with an agent for the player. Back in the day, there were no agents. The player came in sometimes with his wife, who would beat on the pound on the desk wanting more money. And they were terrific. And you always gave in. You know, you're not going to disappoint the wife of a ball player. Or the mother sometimes would come in. It evolved to where agents represented the players in order to distance the player from the management of the club, which I thought was a pretty good idea at the time. because then there was no hostility between the player and the club. But and it's gotten to a point where these agents have really done a great job for their players.
Well, picking up on what you said earlier about finding out if a ball player can accept disappointment, one of the ways you could find that out is by offering them very little money and see how they handle that.
That's a great idea if there's no other teams in baseball.
You would make a great general manager.
Oh, boy. Good, because I need a job really badly. So do all of the players, are there players on a team that are making like a shitload of money, and then there's guys that, you know, just get by?
Well, there is a minimum salary that is pretty strong. It's, I think, $600,000 is the minimum salary, and then it leaps. Once a kid plays 1 year in the big leagues and then a second year, he's eligible for salary arbitration, and now his salary is just going through the roof. You can tell who's making the most money on the club by in spring training looking at the players' parking lot and how many Lamborghinis and Mercedes there are in the lot. Some kid drives in with a used Ford pickup truck. You know, this kid needs a raise.
Either that or he does country music on the side.
Peter, what kid earning $600,000 is driving a beat up Ford pickup at this point?
the ones who have good priorities.
Yeah. Excellent. In the summer of 1966, Dodger star pitcher Don Drysdale was having a bad season. Buzzy Bavassi needled him in the press, and Drysdale turned it around. Buzzy then said, quote, "I had to do something. Donald is not an 8-13 pitcher, so I thought, well, needle him a little bit. So I'm a heel. Who'll remember I'm a heel if we win the pennant?" Sure enough, the Dodgers won the pennant that year. Stay tuned to find out other tricks of the baseball general manager trade. The Cat of the Week is Griffin from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with baseball executive Peter Bavassi. Peter, welcome back. I might have called you Bavassi a little earlier.
Perfectly all right. We know.
Is it?
No demerits there. Yeah.
He called Carl Yastrzemski Carl Yastrzemski, so you're in good company.
You are. Yaz never forgave me for that.
Yeah. Rico Petrichelli, he used to say. So you're in very good company.
But we've got you, Peter Bavassi. Let's talk about this book that Ken wrote about your dad and Al the Bull. What was it like for your father when Al the Bull was playing for him?
Well, Buzzy loved players who were little different. Their character was very strong. They were independent thinkers. They hustled all the time. They just knocked themselves out. They loved the game of baseball, and they loved to play the game of baseball. And they didn't really care how much money they were making as long as they got a chance to play. Now, that's changed a little bit since. And
sounds like
it. A lot about what they make. But Buzzy was attracted to players who were fearless, who, as he called it, the nerves of steel, the ice water in their veins, because the types of clubs he was building in Los Angeles and Brooklyn were destined for a pennant chase. He wanted to win the pennant every year
right.
He had a chance, and he did most of the time. And he knew that he couldn't do that with just everyday really good players. He needed special players who had a special temperament and outlook. and were terrific guys in the clubhouse who got along with each other, who cared about each other. And so it was that subjective part, again, that Paula was talking about earlier, that's so important. And Buzzy saw that in the players that he traded for or brought up from the minor leagues. And Al the Bull Ferrara was one of them. Johnny Padres was another. Don Zimmer was a third. They were all cut from the same cloth. But Ferrara was especially fond of Ferrara for a lot of reasons, not least of which is that Ferrara liked to bet the dogs and the ponies, and so did Buzzy. So they had something they have wonderful in common. And he was a scamp. I guess you would call that's a term that's not used very often, but Al the Bull was a scamp. He was just mischievous. He was not a bad guy at all. I'm laughing only thinking about this one story. We used to call it Ferraronomics.
What's that?
Where Al the Bull Ferrara would come, he had a criminal mind, and he's the first to admit it. And he would come up with the most wonderful ways of like scamming Buzzy out of money for the racetrack, or getting an advance, or getting a raise in salary. And the one time that he used Ferraronomics to a wonderful advantage was in the middle of a season. He came into the office and said to Buzzy, can I get an advance against my salary? And Buzzy says, yeah, but you know what? Instead of an advance, I'll give you this advance, but let's take next year's salary, which is going to be about $30,000, and you're not married with kids, so you can live on $15,000, and we'll put the other $15,000 at the Security First National Bank in downtown L.A., Security Pacific, that the club used as the bank, and we'll put it in a savings account there, and so that you'll be able to draw on it during the off season. You wouldn't have to come in looking for advances. And Al says, that's a terrific idea. And Buzzy said, wait, there's a catch. It's going to be, I have to sign. You sign, I sign. It's a double signature on the card. He said, fine. So they arranged for it. And now, about January, before they go down to spring training, in comes Al, who was living in L.A., and he says, hey, Buzz, can I get an advance? He said, we went over that. You have $15,000 you have in the bank. And he says, well, actually, I don't anymore. He says, what do you mean? It needed my signature on the to withdraw anything. He says, well, he says, you know what? You better talk to Irene Tangi, who was the accountant for the Dodgers. So here comes Irene. And Buzzy says, Irene, what is it? Al is telling me that he has no more money down at the Security Pacific in that savings account that I was authorized to sign for. And he couldn't get money. She said, Mr. B, he didn't get it out the conventional way. What he did, he went in and took out a loan, and the collateral was what was in the $15,000 in the bank account. And he depleted it. He'd go in and get, you know, $1,000 here, $1,500 there, and he depleted it. And the bank got their money, he got his money, and Buzzy got smoked once again. And Buzzy loved telling that story. It's in the book. I mean, there's so many wonderful stories between the two of them in the book.
So you mentioned Don Zimmer. Did he eventually, he was a baseball player?
He played for many years.
And then did he go do something like managing or general managing or something like that for the Red Sox?
He managed the Red Sox. He managed the Padres. He managed Texas. He managed the Cubs.
Well, one of the things I'm noticing, Peter, is that you say this person was a general manager for this place and a general manager for that place and a general manager for that other place. Is there a reason these general managers can't keep a job?
Well, no, it's a good question. Now, Don Zimmer was the manager, not the general manager. He was the field manager.
Same question.
It's tough. Oh, my goodness. Adam will tell you, because he's followed the Yankees and other clubs. It's very rare that you have a manager that lasts in perpetuity. Walter Alston, who started in the Dodger organization with Buzzy when they were in the minor leagues together and ended his career in Los Angeles after 23 years of managing the Dodgers on one-year contracts.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Walter Alston, great, great manager, wonderful manager.
Huh. Bonnie Burns is my manager, and we don't even have a contract. So how about that?
You have a handshake.
That's we did not even that, not during
not
COVID.
Not even a handshake?
No, we can't.
Buzzy was telling me one day, he says, I guess I was at Cleveland, and he says, you know, in this business, he said, I never had a contract. It was always a handshake. He says to me, and you have a contract? I said, yes. He says, why? I said, are you kidding? I wouldn't walk across the street without a contract for these guys. They're impossible. We're talking about the major league owners now.
You know what? So far, the players, the owners, and the managers all sound a little untrustworthy. Frankly, the only person I've trusted in any of your stories is Irene. She seems like a straight shooter. But the others are a little flawed, I think. All right, let me ask you this, Peter. Do the players bring their own gloves? Because, you know, the Supreme Court people have to have their own robes.
What a question. Yeah, okay, here's what they bring and here's what they don't bring. The glove companies and the shoe companies usually sign the players to endorsement deals, and they give them free shoes and free gloves. So the ball players do bring their own gloves. They bring their own shoes. The club supplies the bats. The players bring their own athletic supporters. And
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right. And that's pretty much it. The club... Paula, the clubs now in the big leagues today, under the union contract, they have to provide the players with tablecloth-style dining in the clubhouse with two chefs, not just one, two chefs, and surf and turf, whatever the players want, they prepare for them. And it's not like the old days where they come in and have a bologna sandwich and give a dollar to the clubhouse guy and then they go out and play. This is when they say big league, this is what we're talking about, big league.
You know, when we were in the studio before COVID, when we were recording all of us together in the studio, I brought the snacks, just so you understand that.
Good for you.
A very similar quality.
It wasn't really a very similar quality. It was, if I'm not mistaken, and it was much appreciated, Paula, but it wasn't homemade so much as it was a bag of Doritos and a bag of double-stuffed Oreos, usually.
Yeah, but now that I've heard this story, I'm going to use tablecloths when we're back together again. Peter, did you ever have a player that was like a really exceptional player, but kind of an asshole?
There are plenty of guys like that. You find them more often on an expansion club, which I had the misfortune of general managing at
the Toronto Blue Jays.
What is an expansion club?
Well, a newly launched team. Mm-hmm. You're recruiting players. You're signing players for this expansion. You're expanding the league from, say, 12 teams to 14 teams. Mm-hmm. So,
like the Oxnard Goldfish, that team?
So the players that you tend to get on an expansion club are players that no one else wants. They're rejects and they're has-beens and used-to-bes, and it's a terrible thing for the player because they all come to this expansion club with feeling badly about themselves, their careers, and all, and so you have to try to manage that, as well as recognizing that they're not very good ball players. So you have a combination, and then every once in a while there'll be a real good one who disappoints you because he turns out to be the bad personality, like Pete Vukovic, I think. Was it Vukovic? Yeah, no, it's not. It was Mark Lemangello, who's I was going to send him down to Syracuse, and he picked up an ashtray in my conference room and threw it at my head. And it was a picture. It went right through the painting on the other side of the room.
Jeez.
Wow.
Right, squarely. And I said, you know, if you had control like that on the mound, we wouldn't be sending you out to series.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, my gosh. That's great.
Well, thanks to you, Peter Bavese, we've learned a lot about how to manage a baseball team in the general sense. And now we're going to take that information and run it through the old Pouncedonator. Paula?
David, if I can get a little of that great old-time banjo music right there in the background, I'll tell you what my takeaways are. One thing I learned, and the world of baseball seems to be one of the last frontiers to accept this, is that smoking is very bad for you. Will it have to take baseball's general managers having their brains knocked out by ashtrays to finally rid the industry of tobacco products? I never shared this with you nobodies before, but I was a pretty good baseball player when I was young. I could have been the first woman to play on a professional baseball team. I realize now that the junior choir director of the United Methodist Church in Sudbury, Massachusetts, must have ratted me out to a Red Sox scout for being disruptive. And I can't even imagine what my second grade teacher, Miss Murphy, said that kept me off the roster. It sounds like, generally, the general manager hires the players, making sure the team is high in athletic skills and low in dugout skullduggery. Finding players who keep the team glued together and rejecting those who actually glue the team together.
He was the general manager for the San Diego Padres and the first ever president of the Toronto Blue Jays. The new book about his father, Buzzy Bavese, Buzzy and the Bull, is published by the University of Nebraska Press and is in bookstores and available on Amazon right now. And it's written by our own Ken Lezebnik. Oh, man, thank you so much for being on our show. Peter Bavese, everybody.
So much
Thanks,
fun.
Peter.
Thank you. Thank you, Paula.
It was so much fun having you.
Peter, that was wonderful.
My treat. Thank you so much. Adam, hang in there, those Yankees. I didn't have the chance to tell you that Reggie Jackson had come up to our office in Toronto on an off day, and we were going to have dinner. And this was in 1977. And Reggie, before dinner, he's saying, talking about, come on, let's go. I'm hungry. I said, I got to finish this budget, for crying out loud. I have to have it in tomorrow. He said, what are you working on? I said, the payroll. And he said, oh, payroll. He said, let me ask you a question. Do you think that ever there will be a $1 million a year player, a guy who makes $1 million? I said, are you kidding? Of course not. I said, but if there ever would be one, you're the guy. And he said, so of course, you know, about 4 years later, the guy's making, I don't know, $18 million a year. So what did I know?
And then he picked up an ashtray and flung it at his head.
That was fantastic.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks ever so much.
Coming up, Duckgate. Were you ready to quack back? Or did you think that we should lack the quack because it's whack? That's coming up right after this.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I... Y'all can do it. Y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the best. Okay, never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, is it Renee? And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Fun fact, the scientific name for the Western lowland gorilla is actually Gorilla, Gorilla, Gorilla. The Western lowland gorilla name for scientists is those idiots who think we're deaf.
And now we take you live to French Trump's weekly press conference in progress.
Mr. President.
Thank you. This is Xavier St. John Forsyth from The Guardian. You call yourself a law and order president, but if someone is a political supporter of yours, or like Roger Stone, who was found guilty of 5 counts of making false statements to Congress and tampering with a witness, you commute their sentence or pardon them. How is that law and order?
It is law and order. It's customized law and order. It's like Etsy law and order. Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, special orders, don't upset us. Next question.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Don Robinson with En Vogue magazine. You keep saying you sent in the National Guard in Wisconsin, but sir, it's the governors who call in the National Guard. It wouldn't even be legal for you to send in the National Guard.
I do tons of illegal things. That wouldn't stop me. Oh, shit. I should not have said that. I didn't say that. And if Melania's ex-friend, Stephanie Winston Wolkoff, is here with a tape recorder, it'll be game, set, and match for her. Can someone ask Melania if there is any more space under the tennis courts? Next question.
Mr. President. Gracias, Mr. President. Antonio Montoya with Telemundo. You said that you spoke with the family pastor of the family of police shooting victim Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin. However, his father says they don't have a family pastor.
No. The fake news got it wrong again. I did not speak to a pastor. I was in a pasture. A pasture, not a pastor. Sometimes after spewing so much bullshit, I have to go to a pasture to replenish. Next question.
Yes, you, that beetle fellow.
This is Xavier St. John Forsyth of The Guardian again. You have recently encouraged your supporters to each vote in person and by mail. That's illegal, sir. Why would you ask such a thing?
I want to win, no matter what. This press conference is over.
And we're back.
Hey, French Trump has his own weekly mini podcast, the French Trump Weekly Press Conference, and you can find it, at the same place you're listening to us.
And let's give a quick shout out once again to house band David Bragger. Now, Paula, a couple of weeks ago, the pod puppy, who's no longer a puppy, played a bit of a prank on you and brought home ducks.
Lots of
ducks.
To
your house.
Yeah.
Right. And so during the podcast, what we had to deal with, and I guess what our listeners have had to deal with, is just sort of an inordinate amount of quacking during the podcast.
Well, you know, the ducks eventually began to respond. They seemed to really enjoy my jokes, and that part I loved. But there were, you know what? It's the dog. There were a lot of ducks in my bedroom. Yeah. I've placed them with the forestry service. So they're not in the house anymore.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I did.
So you farmed them out, but you know,
what a cleaning project. Yeah.
I think that was episode 110, was it not, Tony Anita Hall?
It was.
If you want to listen back.
Yeah.
110. And I mean, Bonnie Burns, it caused some problems for you because you had to edit the show listening to those ducks from Paula's house quacking at you the whole time.
Well, okay. So I was the one in charge with deciding what the mix was going to be of the ratio of ducks to our voices. So I worked with an editor on what that balance was going to be.
And our beloved Michael Hoagie.
Our beloved Michael Hoagie. And so, of course, what would happen is he would send me shows with the mix. And then it was like, are there too many ducks? Are the ducks too loud? And, you know, in the beginning, I even called Paul and said, you know, it's just really funny that you can hear the ducks and then the ducks just keep quacking. And how many people would have the nerve to do that? Blah, 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 blah. So, you know, but after hearing the show a couple of times and now we're into 20 minutes of the show, I got to admit the ducks kind of started sounding irritating. Then I started wondering, is it just because I've heard this? Maybe they're sounding irritating to me. So I was sending tracks over to Paula to see what she thought. And Michael and I would go back and forth to see, you know, were the ducks too high? Were the ducks too low? And finally I said to him, just tell me what you think. And he said, you know what? I'm ducked out. I can't be objective anymore. I've heard the ducks too much. And so finally I decided, let's just go with what we have. The show comes out. And what I always do after a show drops, the next morning I go right to Facebook to see what the reactions are. And I was really astounded to see there were some mixed reactions. And I thought, oh, we must have guessed incorrectly. And the last thing I want to say about this is, you know, like when you go to a rock and roll concert and for 3 days you can hear like the music in your head. I had 3 days of hearing quack, 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 quack.
Yeah, well, you know, I think a lot of our listeners felt the same way. And they didn't even make it through the whole show, some of them. Some of them were really duck triggered. And I understand it because in 1982, I went and saw The Who in concert. I was just a tiny kid at the time, one of my first rock concerts. And I should have looked into the fact that it was The Who with ducks, because it was a very, very upsetting night for me. I wanted to hear all my favorite tunes from The Who. I was like 14 years old or something. And instead, I got ducks, lots of ducks.
Yeah. Don't even get me talking about when I went to see the birds.
Right. You should have known. All right. And so on that note, let's bring in Tony Anita Hull, because Tony, some of our listeners had a few problems with the ducks. And so with that in mind, I want to bring forward Tony Anita Hull, who's had to field complaints on our Facebook page, which I recommend everybody visits, and via emails all week. Tony, talk to us about Duckgate.
Yeah, you know, it was 50-50. People either loved the ducks or they hated the ducks. There was no in between. So
okay, you
want to
read us some of the responses?
Emails. Yeah, absolutely. So Andrew S. emailed us, no more fucking ducks. Please, I love the pod, but no more fucking ducks.
You know, Andrew, I do agree with you, but what are you going to do? There's ducks in the room. It was time to make the show. It's not like I could just throw them out. I didn't even know where they belonged. I got the forestry service. The ducks aren't here anymore. I apologize for the difficulty that you went through, Andrew. Imagine me cleaning all that duck waste off my wood floor.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Tony, anything else?
There's a lot else. So we have, thank you for all the joy you brought me, especially during the 1-2 punch of the pandemic and the Trump administration. But if I ever hear those fucking ducks again, I shall be forced to lay aside the path of peace to which I have devoted my life. Peace be with you, Reverend Joe.
Oh, so we have an actual reverend who actually typed fucking ducks so and threatened to kill them.
Wait a minute. Isn't the afterlife, Reverend Joe, isn't the afterlife supposed to have us all, like the peaceable kingdom, where we all, everybody is together and there's animals and the lion lays down with the elephant or something like that? You're going to have to live. You know what? If you believe in an afterlife, sir, you're going to have to live with ducks.
Maybe, Paula, but you know, it was never the lion lays down with the duck. It was the lion lays down with the lamb, I believe, which lambs make noise, but I would agree that the duck noise is kind of uniquely annoying.
So are we, therefore, are religious leaders now going to exclude ducks from the promised land? This is, you know what? I'm bringing the ducks back. That's not right.
No, don't, Paula, don't do that. I don't think we should exclude them from the Promised Land, but if the Promised Land has a podcast, we should think long and hard about whether we let ducks into the room. Tony, let's hear some more.
Wait a minute. Back up. Of course the Promised Land has a podcast, and we need your theme songs for it. So please, write in with your Promised Land podcast theme songs, and they're brought to you by Noom. All right, go ahead.
So this is positive. This is from Jim S. in Tampa, Florida. I loved, loved, loved the ducks this week. Perhaps you can consider chimpanzees or maybe lions. The only thing better than the sound of chimpanzees is talking chimpanzees in clothes, like Lancelot Link. I don't know what that means.
Oh, it was a television show from when we were growing up. Lance!
Oh. Yep. And that's what he wrote out. So those were a couple emails. We got a lot of Facebook comments.
So this was from Jim S. And let me just say, first of all, Jim S., the odds of my dog being able to bring chimpanzees or lions into my bedroom are very, very slim. I mean, I was amazed that she brought all those ducks in here. But, you know, we have a park down the street from our house where there's ducks sometimes. So she may have gotten them from there. But let me just say, I love you.
Excellent. Let's get some of these Facebook ones, Tony.
Yeah, so Eric Keene wrote, I'm sorry, after about 10 minutes of the ducks, had to delete the episode. Love, love, love the show, but that was just too much.
Okay.
All right, Eric, you know what? I understand what you're saying. I just want to tell you that episode 113 does have chimpanzees.
Donna Engelhart wrote, I was really looking forward to this podcast and lessons about why we need approval. Sadly, I was not only unamused by the nonstop duck soundtrack, but physically affected with pain and anxiety. Definitely not worth it.
Okay.
Pain and anxiety.
Back up, Donna. You know, we're all triggered in different ways these days, and I'll grant you that it's a time of great stress, and I'm sorry to have added to your pain and anxiety, but oh, come on. So I'm assuming that your five-year-old birthday party with the petting zoo, you just flipped out? Ow, ow, ow. I don't understand why they would have caused you pain and anxiety, but I'm sorry for any pain and anxiety I may have caused. Bad dog.
Oh,
bad dog.
You didn't cause it, Paul. Yeah, it's the dog's fault. Let's be clear. Yeah. Okay, Tony, are there any others? Are there some positive ones?
I don't want to focus on the negative. So, Marsha Dotson wrote, I'm 14 minutes in and have been laughing hysterically. Heart emoji.
Oh, that's nice.
Okay, well, that's
although
nice.
I will say a lot of people have said that they lasted 10 minutes. So Marsha may have just been 4 minutes more powerful than the others and then gone on to have hated the ducks like so many others. You know, I am not a great dog trainer, but I've managed to get, you know, sit. She does a pretty good stay if she feels like it. But don't bring ducks in the house. I don't even know how to train that.
Yeah. Yeah, the no duck command is really hard for dogs because they're kind of trying to bring ducks. A lot of them are bred for it.
Exactly. Tony, if I can be so bold, what exactly did Alan K. Parks say?
He said, I love the subtext of duck approval, so there.
I love you, Alan K. Parks.
Well, now, look here. Now, Tony, these are wonderful. And Listeners, we are listening to you. We know some of you love the ducks, and we know that some of you hated the ducks to the point where you didn't listen to the episode, and in fact, it triggered physical pain or negative emotional reactions or even nausea. So we've come up with a solution. I'm told by Bonnie Burns, and Bonnie can verify this, that our gifted editor, Michael Hoagie, has managed to purchase from the internet what's called a universal duck filter. Which allows us to differentiate duck noises from human noises and surgically remove, if you will, the sound of ducks from the podcast. So I'm happy to announce that we've posted a show number 110, the No Ducks remix.
Wow.
Which will really help those of you. Bonnie, am I right? Have we managed to pull them out?
Well,
what do you mean no?
Okay. No, I mean, that was such a complicated explanation of what we did. We have a show, an alternate show with no ducks.
Okay.
Bonnie just called your explanation complicated.
I can't believe that. Yes, then rather than tell you how we did it, it's magical no duck
edit. It wasn't any more complicated than we just took the ducks out.
Well, anybody who knows anything about sound editing knows that it's a potentially really difficult thing to do.
No, so I was just explaining how Michael did it. It wasn't a difficult thing to do at all.
Sorry. So thank you, Paula.
You know what? I want to have a little bit of ducks in every show from now on. Wah, wah, wah. Wah, wah. You know what? Not only am I going to have a duck on every episode, but Ed, I just cut myself in half again.
All right. So we are ready to trigger all of our listeners in any way possible. But once again, if you want it, you can find it. Episode 110, the No Duck Remix with state-of-the-art removal of duck technology. All right, Paula, it's been a tough year. Is there anywhere listeners can go to find a little bit of joy?
You know, there is. I'm launching a new show, All Ducks, All the Time. No, I'm kidding. Yes, there is.
The Duck Show with Paula Poundstone.
Yeah. No, I am launching a show called Nobody Asked You, starring Paula Poundstone. It's an over-the-counter game show to help with the symptoms of depression caused by the disaster factory that is 2020. Each week, two contestants earn points for what they know about each other. We tape via Zoom from my living room, so it also answers the nation's cry to fill the void left by lifestyles of the rich and famous. You can find it on YouTube and our social networks like Facebook, which is good because Vlad might want to know what we're up to. And for some therapy for your cats, try my handcrafted autographed pussy pillows, available at my store at paulapoundstone.com. And as if that's not enough Paula Poundstone for a lifetime, go to cameo.com/paulap33 and I'll deliver a video message to whoever you want. I'll tell your mom that you love her or Mike Pompeo that picking up his laundry isn't part of your job description. That's cameo.com/PaulaP33.
All right. And Paula, if I may, I just want to let everybody know that the Starburns Sunday Sports simulcast is becoming a rousing success. And for those of you who haven't heard of it, that is every Sunday night now, you can turn on ESPN Sunday Night Baseball and watch the game without volume. And for commentary, you go to YouTube and listen to commentary by famous comedian Jeff Cesario and me, Adam Felber. So that's Sunday evenings, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Turn on your TV, navigate to us on the Starburns audio channel on YouTube, and me, Jeff, and special guests will give you the game.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's super fun, Paula. We want you to come in and do an inning or two as soon as you can get some ESPN piped into your house. Because although they don't officially support us, well, I'm told what we're doing is at least quasi-legal, and we'd love to have you do it.
You know, I'm happy to be involved in any quasi-legal activity. I don't get cable, Adam.
Yeah, I do know that. But at some point, all this stuff is going to be over. We'll be able to get you to a location where you can sit in and do an inning with us. You know, it's not explicitly supported by White Sox announcer, play-by-play announcer Jason Benetti, who was on our show a few weeks ago, but he did direct message me on Twitter and tell me he thought it sounded like a lot of fun. So
cool.
I'm taking that as a full endorsement from Major League Baseball itself.
Yeah. I don't see why it isn't.
Nah, why wouldn't it be?
See, Adam, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Do you have any ducks on that show?
We don't, Paula. Not yet. No. But if you were to guest on it, you could bring a duck.
You know, I'd love it if when there was a foul ball, you heard, wah.
Oh, I see. It's a foul joke. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense to us.
It's a loosely tied in foul joke. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll take it. All right. We want to hear from all you nobodies out there. If you want to enter our theme song contests and succinct show descriptions or just drop us a line, send it to us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. Once again, nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com.
You can find me and Adam on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We're all over the place. And check out our Facebook page at Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Adam, answer the phone.
What? No, Paula, I'd almost made it out of this show. Come on.
No, the phone's ringing. Answer the phone.
You know what? Here's an idea, Paula. I'll do the ending credits of the show, and then we'll end the show, and then I'll get the phone.
No, get the phone now, please.
Jesus Christ. All right, hello?
Hello, Adam. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I don't recognize this voice, which is kind of a relief. Who is this?
This is Tatiana Oblonsky. I am Vladimir Putin's food tester.
Food tester? So Vladimir Putin has a food tester?
He is not a well-liked man.
Yeah, no, I got that right away. So you don't taste the food to make sure it tastes good. You take a little test of his food to make sure it's not poisoned.
Right, not poisoned. And not a little bite. He takes a little bite. I eat most of the food, just to be sure. I'm always full, you know? Like, push away from the table and unzip your jeans full.
Oh, that's a terrible feeling. I know that. It's like the post-Thanksgiving kind of feeling, right?
Right,
where you just
right.
want to just feel awful.
It's a terrible job. Putin is always hungry. He always wants more. There is no satisfying him. It's partly, of course, because he only takes a little bite of each dish. I have to eat each of his pelmeni around the edges to leave him just a little bit. Then, of course, he's still hungry. He wants beef stroganoff. I used to like beef stroganoff, but now I hate it.
Oh, beef stroganoff. I love beef stroganoff. I make a great beef stroganoff. Tell me, does he usually do with the creme fraiche or does he add the sour cream to it?
Don't say sour cream. Oof, I'm nauseated constantly.
Sorry, I just love the creaminess of the beef stroganoff. Even if you don't have creme fraiche, you could just substitute sour cream and it's fantastic.
Stop it, please. Will you stop it? I think I'm going to hurl.
Hey, now, there's a guy named Ed who listens to our show who will hate the fact that you said hurl. He'll probably sue us now, and he'll never be able to eat beef stroganoff with sour cream again.
Oh, woof. My God, stop. Fuck you and Ed. Look, I've got to go. Putin is on the phone in the other room. I can hear him saying, talk to you later, Donald. He'll be wanting his blinis now.
Well, enjoy your blinis. Bye, Tatiana.
Goodbye, Mom.
Paula, did you hear her call me Mom at the end of that?
Yeah, I think, I don't think she's able to talk freely.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Oh, thank you very much for explaining Tatiana to me. Well, she was caller number, what are we at now, Tony, 86? In our 100 caller contest?
No.
88.
She was not a part of the 100 caller contest. She didn't say a word about the 100 caller contest.
Well, Paula, it's never been a rule of the 100 caller contest that you have to say that you're calling about the 100th caller contest.
Well, it's just a rule now.
Wait, what? No. She's number 88 and we're getting to the end of this. Please.
She can't hang out with you after the game anyway. She's Putin's food tester, for Christ's sakes.
All the better. I'm ready to declare her the winner.
Yeah, and she wouldn't be allowed. Right. She's not even in this country.
That's not a rule either.
No foreigners accepted there.
What
we
the hell?
We can't, no.
All right, that's our show for tonight. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone, yours truly, Adam the Felber. Special thanks to our guest, Peter Bavasi, and thanks to our house band, David Bragger. You can visit David's critically acclaimed record label at www.oldtimetikiparlor.com. Our show is produced by Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, Bonnie Burns, Ken Lezebnik, and Tony Nita Hall. Mixing by Michael Hoagie, Starburns production by the great Land Romo. And a big thanks once again to former intern Doug. Doug, we still miss you, and Doug's family, we know you're listening. Much love. Transcription services for the show provided by TranscribeMe, a premier internationally used transcription service. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at transcribeme.com to receive an expedited service.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
I think these listeners kind of radicalized you on the duck issue because you didn't seem like a fan, and now...
Of what, the ducks?
Yeah.
I just, you know, I think it was, for me, you know, I just think that Donna, if you get anxiety and physical pain over hearing right. ducks quack, I think that there are other problems there.
I think ducknophobia is real.
Yeah, well, maybe she needs, what do you call that, when the exposure, you know, to ducks. Maybe she needs more ducks. Maybe
oh,
she
exposure
needs,
therapy, yeah.
Yeah, maybe she needs a Donald Duck-themed bedroom set.
Wow. I guess it's possible.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, the ducks are gone now. Doesn't matter.
Quack.
Wait a minute. Did you hear that?
Quack, quack.
Starburns Audio, a podcast network.